10 minutes in tech.
Okay, welcome to 10 minutes in tech, the show where we give you the hottest tech news in no less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, we're sitting here drinking tea on a cold San Francisco Friday afternoon.
It's not too cold, but we've been gone for, no, actually just a week now.
It's only been a week.
And back with lots of tech news.
Let's jump right into it.
No,
the biggest story
dilly-dally
of the week, Nick, Diaspora. Okay.
Diaspora,
not so much.
Did they
Diaspora
launch, Chapin? Just give me two words, because I don't give a crap.
No, they showed a look of what it's going to look like. And everybody's going, ooh, it's simple, it's clean. And you know what? It looks exactly like Facebook.
That's right. So Diaspora is the Facebook clone that got funded in the heat of the
Kickstarter.
Facebook.
Got $200,000 in Kickstarter for
doing
nothing.
Everyone was mad about Facebook. And so, they got $200,000 for doing nothing. They've launched, and by now, everyone's over their Facebook hatred, and no one cares.
Okay, moving on, Nick. You wanted to bring this up. Mike Arrington posted an
Women
article
in tech.
About
women in
women
tech.
In tech.
Sensitive subject, but pretty hot. It's been in the news. Not the women, necessarily.
Whoa.
But the story has been getting very sensitive subject. Anytime you bring race or gender into these subjects, obviously technology heavily male oriented. They don't call this Man Francisco for nothing, Chapin.
Or Man Jose.
That's right. You were in Man Jose yesterday.
Oh, that's beautiful.
This is a tough subject, but everyone's been talking about it. The big thing that happened the other week, Mike Arrington wrote an article. Basically, people had been...
Well, he's getting together his TechCrunch Disrupt conference.
That's right.
And he's been kind of telling people what speakers will be coming up.
Planting
the
seeds.
And there was a woman, I actually don't know where, Wall Street Journal probably? Yeah, I think Wall Street Journal, who basically said like, oh, can't wait to see this year's tech, or this... conferences, line of speakers, I'm sure will be like incredibly male oriented or something along the lines.
But she took a pot shot basically at TechCrunch, and this was kind of the final straw for Mike because TechCrunch, like many tech companies,
he's been holding it back
has
way
been
too
doing
long.
No, they've been doing everything they can to get women in the company. They have a woman
CEO and two of the four
board of directors,
head editors,
or whatever, are women. They have women editors, so obviously they're not, they're doing more than enough to try to get women in. And that's kind of, in general, a lot of tech companies are, because there aren't that many women who go into technology.
Yeah, let me give you the real quick gist, and then we'll get your thought on
so
it.
So this lady, article, this woman...
Woman bashes, or kind of takes a pot shot at Mike Arrington. Mike Arrington says, that's enough, I'm going to tell you how it is. Basically, it's not a matter of us not wanting, or tech companies or startup companies wanting to be involved with women. It's a matter of there's not enough women out there who are willing to take risks and be a part of this whole industry. And in fact, that if we're really going to talk about this, the women that are a part are totally over-talked about and are given a total leg up in this industry because there's so few of them.
Yeah. So that's basically
your thoughts.
Tech companies have been criticized for not having a lot of women. So I go both ways on this article because he got a lot of heat for this article, which was what the article was supposed to do. Because he kind of suggested that women inherently are not risk takers.
Well, he threw that at the end, but then as soon as he says that paragraph, he says, I don't really have a strong opinion on this.
No. Oh, yeah, actually, he quoted someone else who said something about it.
Exactly.
But which is kind of where it gets hairy when you bring that up. But basically, my take on this is I agree with him for the most part. Women don't go into technology. Don't blame the tech companies, because women, if anything, actually have an advantage when it comes to getting into technology.
I very much
so
agree.
So for these kind of like these reporters, they always... kind of play that card when they cover tech companies, like, oh, like they're biased towards women or something. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, and what he says at the end, which I kind of like too, is this woman and other people that have kind of been ripping on him, they like to, I mean, these are journalists, so it's their job, but they like to stand back and just complain about it, where he says what she could be doing is starting her own company, and then he links to some woman who...
That's right, that's the spirit. But where I disagree with him is I don't think... basically then he's like, you know, it's not our fault. You know, it's the women. They don't want to do it. It's not, I disagree with him there. It's not the women's fault either. And someone else wrote an article. I can't remember if it was, I think Harry McCracken maybe linked to it. I'll see if I can find it, but whatever.
Is that a real name?
But someone, yeah, it's a tech journal. They wrote an article saying, pointing out, in response to this article, pointing out the real problem, and that's that it's a societal problem that women aren't encouraged to go into technology in school. You know, this is a root problem. If you want women to get involved with technology, that doesn't mean tell women, oh, be more entrepreneurial, or say, oh, come work to our tech company. What it means is, in school, let's get women involved with computers. You know, let's make it a little more women-like to do programming. This is a very male-oriented thing. And you can argue about whether they're inherently disposed, you know, away from that. Well, I'm saying you can, but that's not the point. The point is, if you want more women, let's get them more involved. Let's publish more stories about women so that it's more acceptable, socially acceptable. Yeah. So they're going to want to get into it.
And I do agree with Mike Harrington. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know Mike Harrington. He could be a total creep and chauvinist. Who actually knows? But I do think just stop blaming these tech companies. I mean,
he's obviously not a show, you know, like, based on how he runs his company, right?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I just think it really is, stop talking about it and just, like, go do it. Go anyway, be a part of it, and I think it'll be better off. Everybody will be
better
off.
Okay, next big story, new Twitter. This is basically one of the first overhauls of Twitter. Certainly in a long time.
Yeah, so
arguably the biggest change ever.
We'll post the video.
The biggest change is basically Twitter is now, you know, Twitter basically usually just links to everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you can basically see a lot of the media in the links right on Twitter.
Yeah, so the stream is basically in the left column. It's split into two columns, wouldn't you say? Stream is on the left column, and basically now if you click on somebody's tweet, on the right side is a whole bed of rich media.
Yeah.
Like if there's a picture that somebody's linking to, the picture will pop up on the right side. If there's video, the video will pop up without going to
the site.
A different
so
site.
So why is this big? For two reasons. First, for what you just said, this keeps people in Twitter. Twitter used to be the thing you got to link to everything else. So mm-hmm. It was like a news feed that took you to other people's sites. Now you're seeing this content in Twitter, so you're not, so Twitter or YouTube advertisements on the site, they're not going to be seen because people are watching the video in Twitter.
Yep.
You know, these photo sites, all these photo sites that are, they, you know, Twitter, they counted on Twitter traffic to drive, like Daily Booth, one of their big partners, counted on Twitter traffic to drive to their site. Now they just see it in their site.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, probably
there.
A lot of people will complain.
The second reason this is huge is because it completely kills the third-party Twitter clients. Yep. So basically, they're saying, we're making the best Twitter client, and you guys are done. You can try to compete, but you're not going to be able to because we have all the goods. You know, we're in the same business as the third party. So the third-party people, they're going to have to reinvent what they do with Twitter. So this is kind of controversial if you're kind of a Twitter purist, certainly if you're a developer. What are your thoughts on this?
No, I mean, I suppose it can be controversial, but I think it's brilliant. I mean, they have to do something.
Yeah.
They have to do something new. This immediately, whether you like it or not, you know, like advertising pays the bills, and this immediately gives them a platform.
That's
to
right.
Pop
this is
up.
The best step to monetize.
No, I think it's, I mean, you can't continue on just being a stream.
Yeah.
Without having major, you know, issues about figuring out how to make money.
Well, if
and
you
how
want,
to innovate.
If you want to be a competitive business company, you can't.
Well,
which
and
is.
I think, you know, for the developers, sure, they have a gripe because they've invested some time in working with them. But at the same time,
that's what people always say. That's the nature.
Why should the third parties be making all the money and creating these things when.
Especially if it's a business. Now, Alex Payne came out and he wrote an article. Basically saying, voicing, he said the new Twitter's cool, but his complaints were that, similar to what we're saying and what developers have been saying, when he was working at, he used to work at Twitter. When he worked there, he wanted Twitter to be a medium.
Yeah.
And not...
He's a Twitter purist, as you mentioned before, yeah, which is safe to say.
Not a business. So basically, they'd be working towards a standard that all the third parties would be in charge of the business. I think that's a valid point. And in this, he even says it. It's a valid point, but if Twitter themselves are a business, it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
This is what they had to do. So it looks pretty cool.
They have investors. Yeah. They have to kind of take care of that.
And to the point that that these, now that they're showing the content, takes away from these companies.
Yeah.
The counterpoint to that is, like, someone from Daily Booth. You know, the best advertising, I mean, certainly it's not as good as just linking, but the best advertising you can get is showing up in Twitter everywhere. So.
And let's just say, just to tie this into what we've talked about before, I think this is a great example of Twitter trying to be a little proactive before it gets too late. Dig, we talked about last week, it's 3 years before they made a change, and now they're running into major problems.
Yeah.
Twitter's trying something, at the very least. Mean,
you could argue on principle, but I think this is the right move from a business standpoint.
Okay, Nick, let's move to more boring stuff. Windows Phone, GSM.
Whoa, Chapin, back up.
Only 2010.
This is boring, you're not going to be even starting to listen to this.
It's going to be 30 seconds on this one.
Okay, no, we're going to talk a little hardware. Windows Phone 7, GSM only in 2010. The new Windows Phone, we talked about it, looks cool. It's only going to come out, as of now, on AT&T in this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not Verizon until next year.
So quickly for our beautiful listeners, GSM versus CDMA, just kind of
Verizon is
10 seconds.
Okay, so basically, again, it's coming out on AT&T, not Verizon. The reason this is significant is because the whole Kin debacle supposedly soured the relationship between Microsoft and Verizon.
Yep.
Why is this interesting? Because if Windows 7 wants to be competitive at all, if it wants to compete with Android, it's got to be on more than just AT&T.
Yeah.
Because chances are, if you're on AT&T anyway, you're going to be using an iPhone. So this makes me even less, or even more skeptical that the phone will get adoption, which is too bad because it looks like a cool phone. But very interesting to see how, you know, as these carriers really playing a bigger role.
It's a messy, messy group.
I just want the phone, man. I want to test out the phone.
And manufacturers.
If me being on Verizon, you know, it's a little disappointing. Anyway, other kind of hardware carrier phone related news. Samsung Galaxy Tab announced. This is Samsung's,
like a tab.
This is
not
Samsung's
tablet, it's a tab.
Android tablet. And it's the first Android tablet that's not a piece of crap.
Can I just say it's tiny?
7 inches, right?
Yeah, what is the iPad?
9. 10.
Oh, okay.
No,
it
nine.
Looks tiny.
I think it's nine.
You can hold it in your hand.
It's
I like
comfortable.
The, I like
anyway,
the iPad.
Okay, so why is this significant? What's the point of this? Interesting. First, like, legit Android tablet launching on all carriers, which is what Samsung did with their latest Android phone. Very impressive. But even though it has the Google App Store and is kind of, you know, acknowledged by Google, it is not... Google has not officially made a version of their OS for tablets. So it's going to be... It is running the Samsung TouchWiz crap skin. So it's going to be the best tablet so far, but not... I don't think this is an iPhone killer.
iPad killer?
iPad killer, especially when they're going to try to sell these on contract. There's no phone in this thing, in the American model at least. So basically, if you know, you're going to end up paying $400 probably. Why is someone going to get this instead of an iPad?
Well, and it also says there's no reader hub or something available, so that takes away.
Yeah, I think this
is reading off of apps and stuff. It's a good start to see that things are coming out, but
yeah, again, Google hasn't released their official Android tablet
thing,
so
for that.
I don't think this is going to be good. What I think this will be interesting is to see if they can sell them.
Yeah,
I don't think this will be good. I think the iPad is an obvious choice, but it'd be very interesting if the people who wander into the Verizon store, if they can sell them on these tablets, saying it's better than.
Yeah, I don't think so. Anyway. On a related note, Nick, notebook sales down significantly ever since the iPad came out.
Yeah,
everybody's talking about notebooks are the next great thing. You would never get a laptop or a PC or anything like that.
Well, this is the question though. Every pundit is going to be like, iPad's killing the notebook.
Killing it.
But is it killing the notebook, Chapin, or is it the fact that notebooks are basically netbooks are pieces of crap and haven't improved in 3 years. They're all running still Atom processors.
They didn't really have to until something new came out.
I know, but basically what I'm saying is it's not necessarily that the iPad's there. It's that these things are crappy.
Well, I think it's a combination.
And notebook doesn't necessarily mean, you know, netbook. But basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, I should be able to get a really, like, you know, efficient running netbook for $500. Yep. It can play HD video, has an awesome battery life, and is running on one of these lightweight, like, Snapdragon processors for $500. I can't. You know, these things are basically the same as they've been for the past 3 years.
Yeah, that's
4 hour batteries, Atom processors, can't necessarily play HD video.
That's what, I don't think it's killing this. I think it's just going to have, they're going to have to rehaul a lot of these.
They're killing themselves.
And give things cheaper, and they're going to have to be faster and better products. Okay, moving on, Nick, because we don't have much time. AirPlay, Nick. Talk to me about Apple's AirPlay.
Okay, so we talked about Apple TV last week, I believe. What's interesting about this is it comes out, AirPlay is Apple's system to stream content from one Apple device to another device. So
Very cool. You
can stream, so if you're playing a movie on your computer, you can watch it on your iPhone as you walk around the house. Just came out, you can do this on Apple TV too. So even though you may not have apps on your Apple TV yet, you could, in theory, be playing a movie on your iPhone and stream it over the air to your Apple TV.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of a red herring. So when people are talking, you know, like, oh, like, you can only do this on the Apple TV, why would I get it? Well, it's kind of a gateway to your computer.
Yes.
They didn't play up.
Also, but, I mean, think about having a remote, changing the channels and stuff like that. Bam, your iPhone's a remote control.
Yeah.
Or your iPad's a remote control. You sit there, choose what you want to watch, hit the button, then you're watching it on your TV.
No, yeah, and I think Apple is, you know, as we get into some of these video game stories, I think Apple is more and more going to become a player in that
Can't
space.
Wait for the video game stories.
But in the meantime,
let's skip the next story.
Okay.
Let's get to MySpace.
Okay, well, I'm going to save that. What? You're skipping MySpace? Okay, MySpace is a relaunch. What do you want to say about this?
I think it's very sad.
It's sad, but that's what happens. They got bought out by Rupert Murdoch. You know,
they got
sure
bought
the,
out a while ago.
The founders, there wasn't a whole lot of innovation going. The founders bounced. Like, what do you want?
I know. I was just saying that. I think it's sad.
They still MySpace have a lot of users.
Still working, but it's significantly
Rupert
decreasing.
Rupert Murdoch's trying to sell them now.
The whole thing is sad. Okay, let's move on to games.
Okay, we might go back to this. Let's see how much time we have. So Tokyo Game Show just started. You know, I'm sure, Chapin, you probably don't care.
I've been all over it.
Our listeners, I'm sure they do. But anyway, the big, basically, for those of you who don't know, Tokyo Game Show, probably one of the second biggest game shows in the world. Nintendo doesn't play a big role here, and obviously it being in Japan, traditionally Microsoft hasn't had a big presence. It's been big Sony. So this year, Microsoft tried to, you know, they have a lot of stuff they're showing, trying to penetrate that Japanese audience. Again, Nintendo, not a huge role.
Yeah, what's the biggest news coming out of it?
Just a lot of motion control. You know, again, we're talking lots of Sony stuff. They're moving, they're trying to sell people on their new Sony Move, which is their Wii clone.
Which looks like
Microsoft's trying to push their Kinect, their competition for the Wii.
Yeah, what's your take on this whole movement?
Well,
obviously, Kinect has gotten some, everybody thinks it's going to be very cool.
Well, Kinect,
I didn't even know about the Sony Move thing. It looks stupid. It looks like a goofy looking Wii.
And that's exactly, I think, the problem there. Kinect is different enough. The technology is cool enough, and Microsoft, you know, they're putting enough money behind it so that I think people are going to buy it. It's it's pretty cool. Like, everyone who uses it, it's cool. Sony is, this article links to an article saying Sony Move trapped between a rock and a hard spot, basically saying that, like, they're in no man's land. The Wii was so family friendly, so easy to use, good for casual people. You know, it was easy for casual people to drop $200 on a Wii and play the tennis game once a month when friends come over. Sony, they're not going to drop $400 on a PS3. This thing is, it's not as, like, you know, it's got buttons all over it. Yep, it's for it's like a Wii for the hard, aimed at the hardcore audience. But
this from a question lies. So it's and no I guess this, this article does bring up that point. But one, you've already seen the Wii, so it's not exactly crazy new technology.
Yeah.
And two, Xbox is doing this thing that is much more complicated and interesting. You don't need to hold the stupid thing; you're actually moving around in front of the screen.
Yeah. Like,
it's not innovative, and it's not quite to the point of this other product that's coming out.
Yeah,
why would anybody buy this?
The only way they're going to buy it, in my opinion, is that if it's awesome. If it just kicks ass.
It looks stupid.
I mean, the Wii, it's got kind of a retro feel. It's got the big glowing ball.
Looks like a vibrator, Nick.
It does look like a vibrator. The Wii, again, if you ask me, the Wii sucks. It's cheap, it's convenient, it's catchy. If the Sony Move is really, like, killer, like, has really good sensitivity so that, like, I can literally... Because Sony, you know, for all their troubles, makes awesome games. If you can play a game, a really good Sony game,
where
I'm using this sword, you know, like, I'm using the Sony Move as my sword, and it's pretty accurate and a pretty, like, solid experience, then I think they'll be okay.
All this motion sensor gaming, I mean, like... Can this be more than, especially this Move, maybe Kinetic's a different story, but can Move be used for more than gimmicky games?
Well, that's the kind of the question.
Can I play some awesome Halo game with my little
If it's to that point Move? Where I can aim it around and it's that like sensitive that I could use it as a gun or a sword or something, then I think maybe. But if not, they're screwed. Also, I mean, this whole hardware peripheral, even motion, you know, to a certain extent, this is kind of a fad. And I think it's the Wii has kind of died down. So I think this is almost bad timing. People are almost over that. Microsoft, you're not using any hardware. It's kind of a new technology that you could use for just controlling your Xbox and watching Netflix. So I think they're probably going to be good. And Sony, unfortunately, is probably going to take a hit. Anyway,
anything else you'd like to say about Tokyo?
That's basically it. There's one more kind of gaming-related story I wanted to talk about. This article on TechCrunch. Talking about social gaming. Now, you read this.
Yep.
Do you want to summarize it?
Hold on one
second. It talked about... It was a little confusing, but basically it talked about how, you know, social gaming... social gaming is the hottest thing right now.
Yep.
But basically it was saying, as hot as it is, as hot as popular as Zynga is, it's not... You know, it's not necessarily here to stay. A lot of it, a lot of the success of social gaming has been propped up by, like, Facebook.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it touched on.
Value.
Exactly. A lot of the gaming companies, social game companies, were hopping on the free Facebook wagon for a little bit.
Yeah.
And obviously there's millions of people to kind of throw in front of them. So they were doing okay. And then once Facebook realized that Zynga was just killing it, they were like, whoa, hold on. We have to kind of restructure this so we get a little bit of money. And now companies like Zynga.
And so Zynga basically said, oh, well, F you, we're Zynga, you know, we're Farmville.
Because they were able to build them up to that status.
Yeah. And so, but interesting, as the article says, you know, Zynga goes over and tries to put their game on MSN.
Not quite the
same. And finds out they're just not making enough money.
That's because Bejewels.
Yeah, it's people like the casual gaming audiences in these other places, they're not giving enough money to warrant the cost that it costs to put it on MSN games. So, you know, maybe they are relying on Facebook.
Yeah. I don't think social gaming is quite going anywhere, but I mean... Right now, we've seen Playdom and Playfish. What's the other one? I can't remember. But, like, they're just selling off for tons of money. And that's kind of what this article said is these companies just want to get bought now because they...
It's a little bubble. They draw parallels to the consoles in 2002 to 2004 or something. Or early on in this decade when people were just throwing tons of money, you know, EA and all these companies were getting bought out, and then and it just wasn't sustainable. You know, they did, like, obviously consoles took a dip in the last couple of years, and they were just hucking tons of money and investment into it, and now they're these these game companies are kind of screwed.
Nick, you and I better get farming if we want our Farmville to stay afloat. That's all I'm saying.
No, I think... Well, for like Zynga and social games, I think the best strategy is probably going to be the iOS. You know, running these apps on the stores where they can get the exposure that they might have, especially if Apple does a social
element.
And
then you have to deal with Apple.
Kind of like Ping, if they end up doing that for apps, if they can get the exposure from Apple without the, you know, with a straight up 30% royalty instead of, I don't know what Facebook's charging, but.
Plenty, I'm sure.
Anyway, should be interesting. That's basically it for the show.
That's the show for today. Happy Friday, everybody. We'll be back with you again sometime next week.
Peace.